So you mentioned a little while ago about some of your influences, like Bill Evans and Oscar Peterson, Ramsey Lewis.
Yeah.
But you also talked about some folks that you mentioned to me before, some folks that were less well known that you wanted to talk a little bit about that really were some strong influences on you as well.
Yeah, and what I've brought in, these are people that I've I know or have known. The first I'd like to talk about is the great Judy Roberts, who's really the unsung hero of Chicago. I first became aware of Judy when I was becoming aware of jazz and trying to, you know, figure out how to do it. And I would go listen to her, and she was so hip. I mean, she had such this really swinging style on piano, which still astounds me to this day. I mean, she just swings like mad. Always had a great band to listen to. And, you know, we talked about the Rush Street scene down there, and she was definitely entrenched in that. And to this day is still quite a part of that scene. So I've brought in a sample of a recording of hers, and also a couple of my Chicago buddies. On bass, you're going to hear Nick Tuntas, who I've played with extensively, and on drums, the great Rusty Jones, wonderful left-handed drummer. And these two guys swing like mad, too. And I think we've picked out a little section of her piano solo. The tenor player is Greg Fishman on this recording. Great record called In the Moment.
All right. It's a little bit of Sweet Georgia Bright, Judy Roberts on piano. And there's another group that you wanted to mention as well.
Yeah, you know, we've been talking a little bit about the Latin side of the street. A wonderful Brazilian pianist named Manfredo Fest. He came to the States from Brazil. He moved to Minneapolis, St. Paul, or as we used to call it, Minneapolis, Sao Paulo. And that must have been a shock going to that climate. But our paths crossed. He would come down. There was this, you know, the Playboy Club in Lake Geneva was a great source of music. They had a big showroom upstairs. I had the great fortune working with the Smothers Brothers up there one time. And then downstairs in the jazz lounge, there would be Judy or the great Larry Novak, who was the house piano player at the London House, or this cat, who I absolutely love. He was blind, this brilliant, brilliant Brazilian pianist. He had such a precision on the keys. It was just marvelous. And I loved his writing as well. This tune I brought is actually one that we enjoy playing in the trio. It's something called Who Needs It?
Music from Manfredo Fest and Bert Dalton here talking to us about, actually, while we were listening to that, you had a really good story.
Well, Manfredo was a character, of course, being blind, he never let that stand in the way. He used to, we used to go out in the parking lot at the Playboy Club there, and he'd get on a bicycle and he'd ride it around, and, you know, his buddy, okay, Manfredo, turn right. No, turn left. No. You know, and of course he'd crash, and he thought it was really, really very funny.
Uh-huh. Who thought it was funny?
he did.
Well, yeah, you do have the CD.
Yeah, a bunch of them.
So why don't we go ahead and talk a little bit about that CD?
Sure, okay.
It's called Midnight Coffee.
Midnight Coffee.
Tell me a little more.
Well, after this, I was sort of jumping around chronologically here, but after the series of groups that I had been in, and the latest being Yo Bosso, which was the Latin Jazz Quartet, we had a really good 8-year run out of that group. And I had gone back to trio playing, which was kind of like returning home. And I'd always felt that my identity had been as part of an ensemble. And I was getting to the point in my life where I thought, well, I should probably get something out with my own name on it. But in order to validate that, it would be terrific to have maybe some recognized players on there. I had been friends, well, fans, I should say, of John Clayton and Jeff Hamilton for many, many years. Had bumped into them through Bumblebee Bob Weil's presentations that he used to do in Santa Fe. So I peripherally knew them. And I got a wild hair and went ahead and contacted John Clayton and said, hey, you know, I met you such and such a time, and we have a mutual friend in Bumblebee Bob Weil, and would there ever be an opportunity for recording with you and Jeff? Well, John Clayton should be our next Secretary of State. This guy is such a diplomat. He is just such a gentleman. I can't say enough kind things about him. And he returned my email within 2 hours and, you know, appreciated me contacting him and sort of made it sound like it was a possibility. And he said, well, why don't you send me some of your music so that we can make sure that I'm the right bass player for you? And as things unfolded, I, you know, sent him a few things and told him the concept of the project. And lo and behold, he said, yeah, Jeff and I'd be happy to do it. We just need to find a date. And I had suggested something about 6 months away to allow myself time to prepare. And he emailed back and suggested a date that was 6 weeks away and said, this is the only date that we can do it. And so I thought for a moment and I said, well, be careful what you wish for. So we went ahead and did it, and it was really a thrill. I'm so happy to have had that experience, and I'm very proud of the recording.
Great, great. Well, maybe we should listen to a cut.
Thank you.
That's music from Burt Dalton, and along with John Clayton on bass and Jeff Hamilton on drums, Things Ain't What They Used to Be. It's from your CD.
Yeah, Midnight Coffee.
Great, great. Sounds wonderful, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, just really, really great stuff. And, you know, we're sitting talking with him a little bit about who he is and what he does and why he does it and and why you continue to do it.
Yeah. What's the purpose of it all?
Exactly. So you know, another, I mean, I'm getting kind of esoteric right here, so I might as well go with
Let's do it. Let's go there. I'm with you.
So where do you go when you play?
It's difficult to answer. And people say, well, why do you close your eyes when you play? Well, you know, you're not using your visual sense at all. You're just, you're listening. I don't think I could give you an address or a location of that place where we go.
Because I'd like to go there. I have a feeling.
Yeah. But it's certainly, you know, and let's keep it in the context of the jazz trio. You know, it's a place where those three minds meet and create together. It's a very democratic place where anybody can, through their nuances or musical ideas, lead the direction of the trio. It's very democratic in a certain way. You know, it's not a dictatorial thing where I say, I'm the piano player. I wrote the arrangement. We're going to do this. You are going to play in two. You're not going to pick up your sticks till letter B. And, you know, I don't find that the best music is made that way. The best music is made is when in an ensemble like that, everybody has the freedom to use their own musical sensibilities and influence the direction that the three minds are going. You know, the little independent label that I've started to put out my own recordings is called Trialogue, which is in essence a conversation amongst three people,
mm-hmm.
which to me, that's it. So in terms of where do you go, I don't know. It's a place where I guess the minds meet and we all just try to listen to that music that is coming at us from somewhere outside of us and expressing that in a, you know, together.
But at the same time, doesn't that require, I guess, the doesn't this require a bit of trust when you do that? A bit of it creates, you have to be pretty vulnerable, I guess, to allow that to happen too, don't you?
You put your life in your brother's hands. You absolutely do. You know, there has to be, that is the, yeah, I'm so happy that you brought that up. That is totally the, you know, the first thing. You know, we all have to trust each other in terms of time. You know, time was a thing that I really struggled with because, you know, as a developing player, I would get excited and start playing faster or, you know, something would be slower. Oftentimes, as musicians, when we play a syncopated figure that's repeated, we tend to, you know, to want to rush. And that really caused me a lot of introspection, like what is really going on here. And it wasn't until I sort of had another light bulb went off and I realized that time, this sounds very esoteric, time is an external concept. Time, perfect time already exists in the universe. It is not up to us to create perfect time. All we have to do is express it. And all of a sudden, this huge weight was lifted off my shoulders. And it's like, man, I'm just trying way too hard, you know? Why don't I just listen to what these other cats are doing? And that's when it became, you know, in very real terms. And I realized that, yeah, it's, you know, one of those things where, you know, we want to make it so good that we try so hard. And we realize that by trying, we're, you know, we're basically defeating our purposes. So I don't know if you're into Zen or anything like that, but you kind of have
to. I'm getting there.
Okay. But, you know, it was just a very realization that if you want to create good music, you kind of have to let go of the result and just allow it to happen in that moment. And that's what's exciting about jazz because you don't know what's going to happen in the next chorus. You don't know what's going to happen in the next measure.
Mm-hmm.
Anything can happen.
That's right.
And that's, I think that's what really is exciting about it because it's completely life on the edge. You do your preparation, you do your homework, but when you get in that moment, it's all about radar.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you. Well, you know, we're talking about radar and moving around a little bit. So,
okay.
How did your radar end up bringing you here to New Mexico?
Well, that's an interesting story, and I'll give it to you in a nutshell. You know, going back to Chicago, this group we had, the Chicago Jazz Exchange, we were based there. We started that group in 79 and in the early 80s, we started touring with the group. We wanted to go overseas. In those days, there was a wonderful club in the Phoenix area called the Boojum Tree. And we would go out there. Now, you got to remember, 30 years ago, you could play 5 or 6 nights a week in a club. And you would book by the week. You know, okay, we'll be in this club 3 weeks. We had one place in Chicago where we would play 5 nights a week, and they would book by the month. Say, okay, well, we know these 3 months we're going to be here, and then we're going to go over here for 2 weeks. You know, we're here. It's, you know, night here, night there. So during this period, we managed to get we hooked up with an agency. We got a 3-week booking for this group in at the Boojum Tree in Phoenix, and we tied 2 weeks in Albuquerque onto Danby's. That was my very first experience in New Mexico, which was a neat club, which is over on Coors, and unfortunately it's no longer there. But a lot of the musicians I play with still remember that, the great nights that we had. And we also discovered El Paso in the music scene there in a very accidental way. We were in the middle of our 2nd week at the Boojum Tree, and the manager left a message on my phone. He says, can you come down to the office? So I went down there, and he said, well, he said, we've got a little problem with the 3rd week. You guys are supposed to play through Thursday night, but and Stan Getz is scheduled for the weekend. But unfortunately, Stan has canceled. So I was able to get Earl Father Hines instead. I said, oh, that's terrific. He says, yeah, but I had to give him one of your nights, you know. Oh. I said, well, sure, you know, that's fine. It was our first time out here. We wanted to keep a good relationship. So I told the rest of the group about it, and they said, sure, yeah, let's, you know. Our next booking was in Midland, Texas. So we said, well, let's look at the map. We've never been here before. And looked on the map and, oh, look, there's El Paso. We can go there and maybe go across the border and buy some jumping beans. So, well, you got to understand, you know, we're a bunch of guys from Chicago. Anyway, so we went down there and got to El Paso, got off on Mesa, started going up the street, and lo and behold, we saw the signs at Senor Blues Jazz Club. So we stopped in there, and there was Kurt Warren was playing that night, a wonderful guitar player, dear friend of ours who teaches at UTEP, still a friend, still love playing with him. And got talking to him and the other people in the club and said, oh, you guys want to sit in? And we said, yeah. Well, here we had this very, very well-oiled trio with a great singer out of Chicago. And I got to say, it was pretty formidable. So, you know, we went up there and went into our routine and took no prisoners, and they thought it was pretty cool. So that was how we started getting bookings there, and that was where we first recorded the Chicago Jazz Exchange, was at in El Paso at Senor Blues. It was run by Mike Francis, still a good friend, still a wonderful piano player living in Roswell now. We still keep in touch.
Right.
And those were some great times. So I'm around, long answer to your question. So anyway, it was through those trips that we started coming to Santa Fe. We played at the old Forge, the Inn of the Governors, and what a great club that was. Years later, when the group started to disband, and my partner Neville and I didn't really have a plan, we said, well, it's January. We don't want to go to Chicago. Let's come to New Mexico. So we did. We put together another group called the Jazz Masters Trio and recorded that group and had a good run here. And as things developed, Neville eventually went back to Australia, and I did some work other places, the Phoenix area. And I had reached a point in my life where, you know, my musical partner had gone. I wasn't really connected to anything at that point. And I thought, well, gee, if I go to Santa Fe, I'll bet I can get a gig. Well, it's been 16 years.
Okay.
And it's been, you know, I got to say, it's been a really great place. It's not a big town. It's not a big music community, but I've been very fortunate and always been able to find a place to play and some people upon which to inflict my musical taste.
And then you still tour around and you still do things. And
yeah. Now, in recent years, I haven't been doing as much long-term traveling, you know, partly because, you know, like we were talking about, the club scene has completely changed. You know, now you do a night here, a night there, instead of 5-6 nights, you know, in one place. I've been really blessed these last 8 years. I hooked up with a nonprofit up in Santa Fe called the National Dance Institute. It's a program that works in the elementary schools with kids, with, you know, 4th, 5th grade kids. Mm-hmm. they use a lot of musicians. And I've got the best gig in the world because I get to put together a 10-piece band, a dream band every year, write all of the charts, and basically light a fire under a cast of 500 energized kids and doing these shows. And it's really a great ride. So that's been – I was always afraid if I got a day gig, I wouldn't be able to be creative. And it's turned out to be just the opposite, because not worrying about paying the mortgage allows you to play more of the gigs you want to play. So it's really worked out.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's really wonderful.